You're heading south of the Mason-Dixon. This is the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Here is your host, Brian McClanahan.
Welcome back to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. This is your host, Brian McClanahan, and this is episode 102, covering the year of 2017. So this is the year in review at the Abbeville Institute, a little different today. Glad to have you back in the program. Glad to be here. This is our last episode of 2017. If you do like this podcast and you do want to share it around on social media, please find us on social media. You can do so by going to our webpage, abbevilleinstitute.org. At the top of the page, you'll see all of our social media buttons, but you can find us on Facebook at Abbeville Institute, on Twitter at Abbeville INST, and of course, you can subscribe to our YouTube page, also Abbeville INST. If you want to help us in our mission to explore what is true and valuable in the Southern tradition, please consider a tax-deductible donation to the Abbeville Institute. Time is running out for 2017. Again, just go to our webpage, abbevilleinstitute.org. At the top of the page, you'll see a button that says Support. Click on that. You'll find memberships for individuals, and you can give as little as $3 a month or $25 a year or $5 a month or $50 a year, depending on if you're a student or not. And we do have other types of options as well. Just in that menu there, you can see you can donate if you're a business as well. So there are plenty of options, plenty of ways to give to the Abbeville Institute. You can help keep the podcast going, help keep the website up and running, help keep our programs coming, which, of course, we do have a program coming up in February of 2018 in Charleston, South Carolina, February 23rd and 24th on Confederate monuments, which is timely because, of course, as we began the year with the attack on Confederate monuments and Confederate monuments coming down in places like New Orleans, we end the year with Confederate monuments coming down in Memphis. And so I'm going to talk about that today. But our program addresses these things. So please go on out and support our website and our mission. Please go to our social media pages and support us there. We do exist on your generous contributions and the ability for you to share around our materials. So all of those things, we do appreciate it. And I will say as the year comes to a close, we've had a very good year in that way. And so we do thank you for all the people who have donated to the Institute, all the people who have helped us this year continue our mission. We've had a very good year at the Institute in terms of profile and material being shared around. Our social media accounts have more users than we've ever had. So we do appreciate all of those things. We cannot do this without you. Those listening to the podcast, those who are going to our social media accounts, those who visit our webpage, and those, of course, who support the Institute through financial contributions. Okay, so I want to talk about the year in review. As I said, we began the year not knowing. 2017 opens. Of course, it's a big year in politics and all those things. We've got the election of Donald Trump, and people are euphoric about that, and some people are upset about that. They want to go outside and yell at the sky. So we have all these things going on. And of course, our mission continues, which is to find what in the Southern tradition is important for our current social, political, economic climate today in America. And it just so happens that we started to see in 2017 a number of Confederate monuments come down. Of course, the attack on the Confederate flag and Confederate symbols and all these things really began in the modern form in 2015, June of 2015. But it's continued in various ways throughout. And of course, there was a general law here for a few months, but the city of Memphis this week decided by selling two city-owned parks, state-owned parks, government-owned parks, I should say, for $1,000 each, that this private company can now remove a statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest and one of Jefferson Davis. And so they skirted state law by doing so. I don't know what this was going to happen with this, whether there's going to be the legal challenge here. I'm sure that's going to happen. I'm sure there is going to be some legal challenge, and we'll see what comes out of that. And of course, this has been a process during this year. Statues coming down, symbols under attack. And we've continued to plug along here at the Institute because of one particular thing. And I actually want to go back and read part, or at least paraphrase part, of an email that Clyde Wilson sent me after the last two podcasts. If you think back, episode 100, a very special episode, I had Don Livingston, the president of the Institute, on this podcast. And we did an interview and we talked about the South and the Southern tradition. And one thing that, of course, came out of that was this idea of decentralization, the political tradition of the South, which is still something that's very current for modern America. As we look at some of the things going on, people are talking about political decentralization in a variety of ways, whether it's for lefties like out in California, or if it's things like state interposition or nullification, for things like domestic surveillance or marijuana legalization, all these other things. People are talking about this decentralist political tradition, or you know, issues like abortion. All these things are coming up, left and right. And of course, that's very much part of what the Southern tradition offers for modern American society. And when you look at the series of lectures that Eugene Genovese gave back in the early 1990s, that was part of it. And but as Clyde Wilson emailed us and he said, "Look, I like that idea." And I, and podcast one episode 101, I talked about this a little more. But he said, "There's something missing in all that. All of these things we talk about at the Abbeville Institute, whether it's the political tradition of decentralization, whether it's things like music or food or literature, the things that the South still really gives to America that makes it richer, all these things are possible," as he said, "because the South is an extension of the people that live there. These things reflect Southern society, identity, personality, extended family, knowing where your people are buried, humor, traditions, the older religiousness, all these things are an outgrowth," he said. "The literature, the attitudes, the music, there's just an outgrowth of these type of things." And he said, "Decentralization really doesn't mean anything unless it has a people, something firmly there, planted there to root it. All these things are just abstractions outside of that." And I think that's entirely true. One of the things, you can't have political decentralization unless you have something to defend. In other words, when the South seceded in 1860 and 61, it had a real tradition and culture to defend. This is why people were willing to do it. It had something tangible to defend. And I know people would say, "Well, yeah, it had slavery." No. The people that were fighting, I mean, I've often wanted to put up the image of, I think it was after the Battle of Gettysburg, one of the images of a Confederate soldier completely blown to bits. His entire stomach is ripped out, his hands blown off, his face is bloated laying on the battlefield. And I'm sure that man was willing to face that horror, because that's what that is. It's an image of sheer horror because he was defending slavery. I mean, it just makes no sense whatsoever. As countless Southerners relayed in their letters, they were going to war to defend their home against invasion. To them, that's what it meant. Rather, regardless of all the other issues surrounding it, to them it was defense against invasion. The women that supported the Confederacy, and many times, as the letters bear out, more enthusiastically than the men, were worried about what they termed, you know, Yankee invasion. They were more ardent Confederates than the men, oftentimes. The pennies that they sent to the effort to build the CSS Jackson in Columbus, Georgia. And again, I've talked about this on the podcast and how you go back and look at the evidence there and the money that was coming in, pennies from children and women just to try to build this Confederate ram in Columbus, Georgia, because they didn't have the funds to do it, but yet private investment going into these things. This was a concerted effort at defending something tangible. Decentralization, I agree. Decentralization means nothing unless you're defending something tangible. And so these things that are make the South vibrant are a reflection of a tangible people. And I think that's important to understand. All the symbols, and I've said this before, and of course Don Livingston has said it as well. When the South seceded in 1661, they didn't have any symbols, except for the American symbols, which they had been a vibrant part of. In fact, you could have said the South was America in the Jeffersonian tradition leading to that point. And I've said on this podcast, the South still is America in many ways. What we think of America is so much part of the Southern tradition. But when you look at when the South left, they didn't have any. They didn't have a flag. They didn't have any statues. They didn't have any of that stuff. And you can tear all those things down all of those things can go away. But as long as the people are still there, as long as the real tangible thing, which is rooted in something, is still there, the South still survives. And it doesn't matter. I mean, I know it does matter, of course, to us, these things surviving or not, because they reflect a people. But if all these things were gone tomorrow, if all the statues were torn down, if all the flags were taken down, if all of that happened, the people still exist. The Irish knew this well. You could retire the green flag. You could make it illegal to fly the green flag. But as long as they could write the songs and talk about the people, one day that green flag would fly again. And I think that's important for us in our despair oftentimes, to understand that as long as we can continue to do this, if we can continue to have the website that we have and talk about Southern culture and literature and music and food and the political tradition and the heroes of the South, all throughout the South, 400 years of history, we can talk about Southern society objectively, the good and the bad. We can talk about the traditions, the good and bad. We can talk about the agrarian tradition rooted in the land and where your people are buried and your families and the environment around you. Those things that are born out of a substantial, rooted civilization. As long as we can talk about those things, the South still survives. Whether the symbols are taken down or not, the South still survives in all of that. And the Southern tradition still survives. Now, it can be dormant. It can be on the run. It can be made fun of. It can be mocked, and it is. But when you look at things like the Hollywood scandals that are going on now, and all of the men that are under attack, and of course, this seems to be an attack on men, but it's really not an attack on men. It's an attack on boys, because the Southern tradition provides the counterweight to that. It's chivalry. It's the chivalric code that Southern gentlemen had that has been scoffed at and laughed at. We now live in the bro society where men act like boys. But perhaps what we really need is a dose of the South. If these men acted like men and showed women proper veneration and respect, and there were boundaries, borders between men and women, and how men and women acted with each other, none of these things would be going on in society today. That is something tangible the Southern tradition provided. It was a reflection of a society and a people. And of course, we've lost that at our own peril. This is what the South offers. When we talk about things like independence and how do people become more independent, you see someone like Dave Ramsey, who's very popular with, you know, saving money and having cash and these type of things, staying out of debt. Well, Southerners, of course, acquired a lot of debt. But one of the things you can see in that tradition was independence. If you could, the Jeffersonian idea, now not even Jefferson himself could live it all the time. He was had a tremendous amount of debt. But the idea of an agrarian independence is born out of the South. To have that in the face, the onslaught of what we're looking at in the financial world today, is something real that you can hold on to live on the land. To have a certain amount of independence, to have that independent spirit, the I'll take my stand narrative and the 12 Southerners, you know, the agrarians. That's something real. The older religiousness, the Christianity that bound the South together and still does bind the South together in so many ways. This reflection of Southern society, and of course, all man is fallen, all men are sinners. No man is perfect. And Southerners recognize that, which is why, as we've talked about in our summer school this last year, listening to Bill Wilson talk about the fact that Flannery O'Connor could point out the abnormal, because Southerners recognized the abnormal. They recognized that all men were fallen. And that there was an odd. And you could point it out. And you could live with it, because you could point it out. You didn't have to. Southerners were accepting of things because they recognized things as odd. Whereas it seems like in other parts of the world they didn't. It was hush-hush. So these are the things, as we close out the year of 2017, and we look back on the articles we produced this year on culture, on politics, on heroes, the countless articles we ran talking about how, you know, New Orleans is ground zero, and why Confederate monuments were built. At the end of the day, the Confederate monuments were built as they reflected a society that admired heroes, that admired gentlemen. As Booker T. Washington wrote, and it's often been said, well, no black people ever supported Confederate monuments. Booker T. Washington wrote that he supported erecting Confederate monuments to the best men in society because they could serve as symbols for men of all races on how to conduct their affairs and how to live their lives. The best men in society should be celebrated, in his mind. And these men that were being honored were the best men in society. Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis. They reflected the best of what the South had to offer, which is why they were there. Or the Common Soldiers Monument, which was just an outgrowth of what was going on in the North as well. They were being built all over the North, soldiers' monuments. Reflected the heroism of a people, the staunch defense of a place, and an American political tradition that defended a way of life. And the sacrifice. These are things that were honorable for generations of Americans. Sacrifice. Americans don't believe in sacrifice anymore. It's the consumer society, the me first, I want what I can get now. It's the immediate gratification society. That is not the Southern tradition. The Southern tradition is slow. It moves with the seasons. It moves with the sun. That reflects a people. Immediate gratification does not fit into that. But yet, America has adopted that. And of course, the Southern tradition can offer a counterweight to that, as Genovese talked about. You can strip away the bad parts of a tradition, the stuff that you don't want to continue to emulate, and you can still have the good, as Livy wrote when he talked about Old Rome. The things that made old Rome great. Excuse me, I'm still fighting a cold today. So when we look at all the things that we do at the Institute, we write about Jefferson, we write about Calhoun, we write about Lee, we write about some of the forgotten men of the South, Bledsoe and St. George Tucker and John Taylor of Caroline, and even people who are should be remembered because they had a prominent place in society, like James Monroe. We write about these people, it's because they represent something real about a people and a place, a tradition that existed far beyond just 4 years of Southern history. The South has a 400-year impact on America. The interaction between Southerners and what they developed over time in a land and a people and a place matters. And again, you can strip away everything else and all of that will still remain as long as people can talk about it. As long as we can write the songs. I would encourage people who are musicians to write songs about the Southern tradition, the land and the people, and still do this in literature. I just received the other day a wonderful little book by one of our contributors, Paul Yarbrough. It's a new novel, Thy Brother's Blood, and so we'll probably review it here soon. But a wonderful, it's a great story of Louisiana, of a people in a place in Louisiana. Do these things. Write these things. Continue to write the songs because that stuff still remains if everything else goes away. It doesn't mean we give up and just throw up our hands and say, you know what, just take all the monuments down, take the flags down, whatever it is. It doesn't mean you give up, but you have to be optimistic and understand. And I'm optimistic, more optimistic now than I would have been 20 years ago in many ways. Yeah, the current attack on the South began more than 20 years ago. It began in the early 90s. It'll almost be 30 years that it began. And it's gained a lot of steam and things are happening. But I think one thing that is happening is Americans are becoming somewhat disgusted by what's going on. They're becoming disgusted by it because they recognize, and as we've said on the show, there is a slippery slope. And people say, that's a slippery slope fallacy. You can't say the founders are going to come down because the South comes down. You can't say Christianity is going to be under attack. Well, it is. You take down one thing, the next is going to fall. The South is a low-hanging fruit. You take that down. And, of course, the next domino to fall would be George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. And then when you take that down, then you're left with, well, what's the underpinning of the entire aspect of Western civilization? One of the things is Christianity. You have to take that apart. You see crosses taken out of churches because, of course, that's offensive to people. So this is all just a slippery slope, and this is why it's important to hang on to these things. But again, they took the crosses out of Russia, the Soviet Union, and they still existed, and they've come back stronger than ever there. Christianity is on the rise in the former Soviet Union because the people held on to it stronger. And they wanted it more because it was demonized to the extent that it was. And so I have hope. People are recognizing this. They're recognizing they need these things. They need this counterweight to modern American society. Whether they recognize where it's coming from or not, that's our job to try to talk to connect the dots. But they recognize they need it. I just saw an article the other day, millennials are moving out of the cities into the country. And they might think this is kind of a hippie agrarianism, but that hippie agrarianism actually is born out of something real, which is the South and the older agrarianism of the South. So there is something there to be recognized. We have to connect all the dots. It has to be real. It has to be tangible. It has to be something you can put in your hand. And so in that way, our year has been very productive. We've pointed these things out. We've had a lot more interest in the Institute than we've ever had before. Across the country, across the world, we have people interested in the Institute all over the world. We have people interested in the Southern tradition all over the world. And that's always been the case. Clyde Wilson used to always talk about how he had people coming from Europe to study John C. Calhoun because to them he offered something interesting and novel about political society. And they weren't hung up on the issue of, you know, slavery, as Americans get hung up on that. You say that person owns slaves, well, then we can't like them. Well, of course, if you do that, you can't like anything in Western civilization, really, because Western civilization has had slavery in it really from the beginning. So we've recognized that as a part of the Southern tradition that we want to do away with. We've recognized that. But it still doesn't take away from the things that many of these people said about society and government. You can separate the two, again, as Genovese said in the early 90s. And I bring Genovese up because Genovese was from New York. He was a one-time Marxist. But he recognized that the South offered something valuable for American society. The critique of the South, the conservative critique of American society only came from the South. People like H.L. Mencken recognize that. The Old South civilization was the only real civilization America ever had. And so all the things that have happened in 2017 could make you depressed, but I'm still optimistic that the Southern tradition is still growing. It's growing in people, they just don't realize it yet. And we are planting seeds and they are germinating. And we have students coming to us from all over the place now. They're finding us. And they're finding the Southern tradition, maybe for the first time. And they're saying, my gosh, this is changing my worldview. This is changing the way I look at things. And when you look at the Southern political tradition defending something real and tangible, we'll see how this is going to work in the future. But certainly, that Jeffersonian tradition is alive and well in America today. And if you still look at the things in Southern culture that make the South interesting, people still enjoy Southern cooking and Southern music and Southern literature. And those things still exist because they reflect a people. And I would again encourage anyone who has an artistic flair to go do these things. Southern art needs to exist as well. Because these are the things that will allow the South to survive. And so one of the things I want to do in this last podcast for 2017, and I'm only going to talk about one article that we ran this week, and it wasn't even an article, it was a story, and it's literature. And it was a story that was published in 1930 by a mill worker. A mill worker named C.M. Bissell. He wrote a popular column in Spartanburg, South Carolina in the 20s and 30s under the name F. Goodloe. And so he wrote this little story in 1930, 4 years before he died. And it's a wonderful little story. It was originally published in the Spartanburg Herald Journal in December of 1930. And I recommend that you read it twice to yourself and then read it twice to your family. But I love the last part of the story. There's funny parts in it. There's parts that'll make you cry. And I love this last part, because it brings together many of the things in the Southern tradition that make it unique and a valuable part of American society. So I'm going to read these last three paragraphs, because again, the expression is here, what makes the South valuable, even in modern America. Well, after so long a time, we got the grandchildren off to bed, and then the rest of the folks, kinder gave out anything else to say, and they went to bed, and left just me and the two little stockings hanging on the mantelpiece in the room. And so I put on my old hat and went out in the yard to look around like I always do, and it was snowing to beat the band. And I stood out beside the garage and watched her come down, and I thought how well the good Lord had treated me the past year. And I was thankful for it, too. I was thankful that we were all home together again, well and hearty and broke. Well, I knew I was getting older, and 1930 had been a hard year on me, with money scarce and my joints getting sort of stiff and hurting lots, and the old mill curtailing all over herself and me too. But still, there was a lots to be happy over, as I thought of them 11 cakes, 2 hens, 1 rooster, and 1 ham all ready to be eaten up tomorrow, to say nothing of the cranberry sauce and the dressing and gravy. And so I went back to the house and stood on the back steps just a moment, and I saw poor old George and Sue come out on their back porch. They stood together, and George had his arm around old Sue's waist. And they was both standing there looking through the driving snow out toward old Bidewell Cemetery, where, under a whitening mound, their Christmas lay asleep. And so I took off my old hat, and I asked God to please kinder soften the thing down for George and Sue. And then I wound it up with the prayer of tiny little Tim, God bless us, everyone. And the old mill bell struck the hour, and it was 12 o'clock, December 25th, 1930. And it was snowing, and so I went to bed. And at that point, it's time to put 2017 to bed for the Abbeville Institute. Until next year, good day.